Hey guys, how are you doing? Yes, it's been a while since we got a nice, exciting interview on the YouTube channel for the Market Sniper. And I've been monitoring Mario Ineko, who you're seeing right now. I'm delighted to have him on. We're talking about a gentleman that has traded in the city of London across a multitude of interesting companies, including Cantor Fitzgerald. You'll all think of one thing in particular with that. Also in Switzerland, he's of Italian descent, but he's studied in the States. He's been around the world. He's a proper globetrotter. Mario, we're really glad to have you and your particular take, particularly on this day, which was ECB Day, that saw the Euro USD absolutely have a spike in fundamentals. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much, Francis. It's nice to be with you. I've watched your channel for the last few years as well, so I enjoy watching it.
Great. And thank you. Yeah, nice to hear. We'll also be pointing those that would like to get your particular fundamental analysis, great analysis, good understanding of obviously the bond markets, the political markets and macroeconomics as per the Austrian school, which I think should be the only school, Hayek, etc. as well. And he is on Manic 64. I'll spell that. Is it M-A-N-E-C-O? Let me just get this absolutely right. M-A-N-E-C-O 64. So go and find him on YouTube and you get a lot of high value updates, I can assure you, in terms of both fundamentals and also the take. But on Euro USD Day, it was an interesting, what's your take? Give us your take on the ECB statement of today, because that was one of the biggest moments of today, and it's very hot, and it's great that we happen to be speaking here. Euro spiking, it literally went from a low of, let me just say, the last week's low was in and around the 111s, and we're trading 114 today. What a spike. What's your take, Mario? What's bringing this all on? What did they say?
Well, I watched a little bit President or Madame Lagarde speak, and she didn't sound very hawkish to me, because being a sound money proponent, I think all the central bankers are way behind the curve. But for the city of London and Wall Street, what I've read and what I've listened to her, well, when I listened to her, the questions people were saying, the people were asking questions, if you're so worried about inflation, you know, my thought would be, why aren't you hiking now? But it seemed like reading a comment from a Deutsche Bank analyst is that the street was surprised by the fact that they put the ECB now live. They call it live. They're going to allow basically the market to dictate the longer term rates. And they've actually pointed out that they're going to stop asset purchases by the third quarter. And she didn't say that they won't raise rates by the end of the year. So they're expecting rate hikes now in the fourth quarter. And reading what this guy from Deutsche Bank said was that prior to today, no one thought that they were going to turn hawkish. And I put quotes on that hawkish so quickly. And the fact that we're seeing the Fed now maybe backtrack a little bit, I think that's what's given this big spike in the euro versus the dollar. Even though in the last week or so, the last few days, we've seen like a the breakdown in the euro there that we had, was it last week or the beginning of the week, that was totally reversed prior to today. So I'm not surprised that we're actually seeing a continuation of that. And I think that's gonna also maybe mark a medium-term top in the dollar index. So yeah, I'm surprised by the move today, but seeing that the city and Wall Street, they're so leveraged in these positions, it only takes a little bit of a change from the central bankers for the market to do that, to make that kind of move, I would say.
Yes, I think you're right about the sensitivity being super, super thin, such minor variations to the left or the right, and possibly the divergence between Fed interest rate policy and Euro interest rate policy had been overly baked in, and we'd already technically sold off quite at an immense amount. I know you're a man who likes and understands the charts. I brought up our take on the Euro USD while you were talking, Mario, And we kind of have a complex head and shoulder that is heading for a target that is yet to be made for our side, which is around the 110. And this seems to be a slowing of the downside momentum with quite an impulsive spike. But is there a way that literally in a day or two or even a week or so, this one could be fizzled back out? Or is it, do you think there's going to be a more secular bottoming and we're going to congest for a lot longer and it's going to be more chop on the euro USD? Because this is the big FX, this is the fiat system we're talking about in here, supposedly about $4 trillion a day. It does dictate, and we've seen dollar dominance as being particularly fear orientated. But I wouldn't say the weakness in the dollar now means that the fear is off either. It's how do you see the fear, the risk on, the risk off relationship as it correlates to an FX pair like the euro dollar?
Yes, I think it was last year, maybe in November or December, there were a few days when the stock market dropped quite a bit and the dollar dropped as well, which is quite surprising. So I'm starting to think that you could see the dollar weaken, even if there's fear in the market. And going back to the euro versus the dollar and your head and shoulder, yes, we could go a little lower, but I've spoken a lot about the dollar index, and I think the high in January 2017 at 103, I think it was on 103.84 or thereabouts.
Yeah, 1st December 16, let's see, maybe you're right, 2nd of Jan, round about 17, and that was a high of, what was it, 103.8.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's been the high since that day. I think in March 2020, we got to just below 103. And if you look at those cycles there, since I've done cycle analysis all the way back to 1969, even though the dollar index was created in 73, you can track it back till then. And I've worked out that the average leg up and leg down is between 7 and 9 years. So I've come, you know, if you take the low in 08 at 70.69, up to January 2017, that's like 9 years. So that's why I think that's why I think we're in the leg down in the dollar index. And as the euro is the major component of the dollar index, I could see the euro start moving higher now. Of course, we could hit your target there at 110. But that might make a little bit of a difference in the short to medium term. But I see the dollar making a new low in the next 2 to 3 years below that. Because as you can see, we've got lower highs and lower lows in that chart. So I would expect to see the dollar index drop below 70 the next in this leg down. It has held up quite well in the last few years, but nevertheless, I think the top was in 2017. And I know there are a lot of people who think the dollar is going to go a lot higher, but I personally don't. And it's not to say that the dollar is trash. I think all the fiat currencies are trash.
Yeah.
The problem with the dollar is that the US is much more indebted. It has much more unfunded liabilities because it's had to basically fund the rest of the world is try to raise dollars any way they can because we are in a dollar system through running huge surpluses. And I think the only wild card I would say for the euro is a political problem like we saw in 2011, 2012, maybe with Italy now or something like that. But
that you're essentially challenging my hypothesis that I'm making. In essence, I'm almost diametrically opposed, which is good to get a thinking man challenging exactly that. Technically, this is our take. I'll give it to you technically, and then we can discuss scenarios where they both both your scenario cost comes off and where potentially the dollar one comes off, and people can make their own minds. So we can almost, I won't say debate, but make the case. Our technical opinion was this, this has been a lengthy falling wedge technically, and that you've made lower highs, as you've correctly alluded to. So there has been compression across the tops of the dollar, but what we've had is marginally lower lows. In other words, they haven't been significant. So the bulk of the compression for us is across these extremist spikes. And then we, this was a pivotal moment for us in and around 14-15. And this became the first of a series of upside moves with higher highs. So we've got this channel drawn in here that is not exceedingly steep, but in terms of the sensitivity of the system now to debt, interest rates, and dominance of the dollar, makes sense that it, nothing could go up with quite the venom that it used to. I mean, if we had that rate of increase that we had in the 80s, my goodness, I would hate to think what that would do with, to the Turkish lira and the likes of the other FX emergings, never mind the euro. I think everything has become far more less room to move. It's like an elephant and two elephants in a phone box having a fight. You don't get a swinging right hook in very easily. So all the movements are much more incremental because of the scale. And I think you said that as well. So I agree with a lot, actually, of what you said. I'm just technically, we'll make the argument that traditional technical analysis and our particular strand thereof said that we actually broke out of that rising wedge on that event over there, where there's been this capping descent. In other words, the sellers have been chasing down these much higher highs. And since then, you're now in some form of a continuation pattern. Our default is always suspect continuation once you've had a trend change. It'll be interesting for the viewers to do a straw poll, bearing in mind that either one of us can be inaccurate. Leave your comments while you're watching this video, guys. Is the dollar index going to trade, as Mario might be suggesting, below? Let's give him the 89 level. In other words, we're going to have a run through the 89. He has suggested even into the 70s, which would be down there. Or is the structure that I'm highlighting in the thinner orange lines right now an upside continuation pattern? You get a bit of a down leg, but then you break to the upside, as we are indicating, which could see 110s. After we've made the inverted head and shoulders and in around the 99. So there will certainly be rest pause because of the rate of increase. You're not going to get any ripper markets. And if you do, it will be very quickly over for the reset. That's our technical justification. Maybe a scenario. It's good to make the scenario for the other guy. So what would be my scenario for Mario's opinion being accurate? And I'll let him make mine. I'd say Mario would be accurate if there was a massive de-emphasis of the dollar in the global. We've got, so it's great to create a scenario for something you don't think is going to happen. It forces you to become more balanced. So if Russia and China successfully get up a lot of yuan trading, ruble trading on energy markets, that really accelerates. There's a much greater uptake of Bitcoin in nation states, could start to see it become a larger sovereign asset. I think those sort of things would be very good for emerging FX if it was to happen, and also for potentially crypto, because you would see the god market of fiats being taken down. So in Mario's scenario, I would see actually being broadly supportive for crypto and also supportive for the ruble and the yuan and potentially FX emergings, with debt coming down. So that's quite an interesting story. But what about the over-indebtedness part of it? How does that not? So my argument in terms of the fundamentals, Mario, and I'll let you have a chance to respond because I'm taking too much time. The Triffin dilemma, that the holder of the god market of the fiat of the world, currently the dollar, even if we differ on whether it's been undermined, they have to be net exporters of dollar because of the dollar-denominated debt. How does Triffin dilemma work out in your fundamental scenario? Do you see a debt jubilee and it no longer mattering? How would you answer the dollar weakness case for the fact that the dollar has to export dollars and import product?
So you want to know, the Triffin dilemma is that the reserve currency will have to run a deficit, current account deficit or a trade
Correct.
deficit. The problem fundamentally, one of the reasons why I see the dollar weakening, aside from the te my technical view on it, is that the Federal Reserve, they can't do what Paul Volcker did in the late 70s and raise rates to basically save the dollar back then. And right now, the Fed has been hawkish, but I don't think they can do enough, and they'll have to keep inflating. And the other thing as well, if you look at March 2020,
But if I could just make a quick shoehorn point in there, they can't. None. I don't think any of the nations of the world can do what was done in the 80s in terms of reining back inflation. Inflation is going to be a global problem, also for the euro. Also, remembering that the dollar is measured. This is mainly the dollar euro, as we say, a lot of the bit of pound and yen thrown in. They are almost more indebted. So actually, we're talking in a relative, say, everybody's much uglier now. We're having a beauty contest with people that have fallen out of 60-foot pine trees and they're battered and they're looking. It's the least ugly. So when you say that about America, given that they still have to export dollars, the euro doesn't have that triffin advantage that there's external demand for euro. How do you counter that aspect?
Well, I counter that by saying that you're seeing a lot of countries, especially Russia, China, making bilateral agreements with other countries to trade with their own currencies. And you're even seeing countries like Brazil, they increased their gold reserves by 60% last year, which is very unusual. And I noticed that President of Brazil has been invited to Moscow this month to for a state meeting, a state visit with President Putin. I don't know what they're going to talk about. So I think also the sanctions, the way the Americans and the British are like putting a lot of pressure, especially on Russia with all the sanctions, and they're putting pressure also on countries like Venezuela and even China, is going to drive more and more countries away from the dollar system. So yeah, that's how I counter that. The trip.
So reduce demand for dollars on that basis. But surely with the increasing of interest rates, those debt payments, even if there's not further leverage extension, the debt payments are going to get higher. And those Turkey, South Africa, all of these places are going to need to pay more in dollars. And the nature of a debt system is that you've always got to pay back more than you originally were borrowed. So I don't think we're going to. I like what you said, and I like that you've countered us, and it gives us cause for stop and pause. But I'd still probably say I'm a dollar bull, despite this shooting star day that we've had. In fact, I could see quite a significant down leg, maybe even a return to the neckline, and a bit beyond. We have an inverted head and shoulder again. That's just the inverse of the Euro USD, which has a shorter term 99 upside. But that marginally higher high and shooting star, it looked like there was a bit of a corrective that needed to come, and it seems we got it. I'd be interested to see your charts. Let's pivot on the Euro USD because there's so much that I think we agree on. Debt, given your expertise in the bond market, you were highlighting the price action of the German debt market. Would you like me to bring that chart up? And what's your take? What does it mean? I mean, so many people don't understand debt markets, the bond market. What would be your bluffers level explanation? Why should someone care that I brought up the Bund market up here? What does the spill mean?
Well, the Bund is basically the after US Treasuries, I would say the most important government bond market in the world, and it sets basically is the benchmark for all the other European markets. And we've had negative rates in the 10-year Bund yield. This is the 10-year Bund for the last few years. And just recently, now in the last few days, it's gone positive again. And today, especially, we went from just above zero to about 15 basis points on the back of the ECB press conference, because they didn't decide anything in terms of rates. And the market seems to be saying that the ECB is going to have to stop the QE, and you know, that's going to take a lot of demand out of the bond markets, because speculate. The other thing about the bond markets, I don't know if you remember, if a year or two ago, there was $17 trillion worth of bonds that were negative yielding, and
True.
that's turning around now. So I think the investors are saying the tide is turning. We're not going to see these negative rates anymore. Yeah, and that's what it's pointing to, I think. And this is the price going down. The yield has gone up, which is a bad thing, because
Yeah.
that will make financing costs higher for governments, for individuals, for corporations. But I think the central bankers, they can still they think they can still maintain this forward guidance that they're gonna able to manage to get inflation back down to 2%, and they're hoping that these yields don't go up like to 3, 4, or 5, which was or even more, you know, in the days that we used to be in the markets in the 90s. And even the Bank of England today, they had their meeting, and they are basically on the same wavelength as the ECB, and they're all hoping that this inflation that they call is just caught is gonna, you know, come back down, because energy prices are gonna come back down. But they never mentioned the fact that they've been doing so much accommodation since 2008.
You bring up a very valid point. One of the things the central bankers seem to have become so good at doing is how it's all about the supply chain, and it's all about, you know, the troublesome oil markets, and, you know, the Russians being difficult, which they aren't. And they forget the amount of printing and accommodation that they've done. I mean, it was 2, 3 years ago, and everyone, when we were in this period, we're talking about negative yields. And it was the NERP. Everything was NERP this, NERP that. And I'm going, I don't see how that would ever get there. We felt this was the top for the 20-year Treasury. So let's take it to the debt markets of the US a little bit as well. We felt this is a top, and that there's even technical structure for this to break down at some point. And that the pandemic was such extreme fear. Basically, you stop the clock on the global economy. How do you do an economic event that is more destabilizing than that? Although the Klaus would like to try, I don't really know. And that was peak bond moment for us. What do you see when you see this kind of? Well, so we had a look at the bunds. They are going down. People aren't buying the negative yielding story. It seems to me that not only are we getting a turning in the American bond markets, it's not. This is a lower high, and I assess that there's deeply possibility technically that you end up with a lower low than this previous low. It seems like Eurozone is now pivoting out of, as you correctly pointed out, that huge degree of negative. People were paying to have their money kept safe, supposedly, in what was deemed to be a risk-free asset, which we would argue is A, not risk-free, B, is grossly overvalued. And it seems like everybody is waking up at the same moment. Is this peak bond top? Is the 40-year cycle over, in your opinion, for debt markets?
It's interesting that you mentioned a 40-year cycle, because I've looked into that, and I noticed that in 1941 the 10-year yield bottomed just under 2%, just before Pearl Harbor, I think, and then in 1981 it topped at 15.5. So yeah, I think that move in March 2020 was also the problem with that move. And we've seen Treasury officials and Fed officials saying that there's a problem in the Treasury market. That, you know, back then when we dropped to like 0.3, I think the 10-year, I think you got the, yeah,
Got the yield there now for you, yeah.
no, no liquidity, like the market makers weren't making a price, which is in the risk in the in a in what's supposed to be the most risk-free asset in the world. When you don't have liquidity, there is a problem, you know. And I think that is the one of the big problems as well. Not just the fact that yields are rising, but that volatility we saw in March of 2020, I'd never seen that before, except maybe in the Greek government bond market or Turkish market or the Italian BTP market back in the 90s. So I think that's a problem as well, the volatility. But yeah, I think at the next level in the 10-year in terms of yield, if you draw a line there from the early 80s or yeah, it comes in around just around 2, 2.5, I think. So yeah, we could still go up there and come down. But like you said, longer term, I think interest rates, yields have bottomed, and we've had 40 years of very easy credit borrowing. You know, people have been everything has been great for borrowers, and I think now it's turning. It's going to be another bear market. Will it take another 40 years? Who knows? But yeah, I see it like you as well. You know, the
Yeah,
bond.
so we agree on the potential that this was a final capitulation in yields and that the next move is up. The only problem is the scale of the debt is so big, it never goes up to this level before some form of financial reset. There's no mathematical possibility for us to see 15, 16. In short, somewhere in this process, quite early, given the sensitivities, we go into Bretton Woods Mark II moment. Do you see that as well?
Yeah, because if the if rates start moving up to like 3, 4% by the time it gets there, and like you said, the Fed will come out again and do more QE. So it could be. I always thought that 2008 was marked the collapse of the banking system. I know it's still around, but it was bailed out. And I thought the next collapse will be the currency because that makes sense. You had the dot-com bubble collapse, then you had the banking collapse. And now, after a banking collapse, it's the currency that collapses because to save all those banks, you've had to issue so much funny currency.
Money.
Yeah, that yeah, so that's how I see it playing out. As for the dollar index, just to I didn't know that you were a very bullish dollar, just to let you know. I was just giving you
Oh,
my
no, I
opinion.
love that you have a contrary view. Don't apologize for that. Everything must be challenged. It's awesome. And it's good that people see us having different views
Right.
on as well.
And one thing I would say about the just turning to gold a little bit, because back in not 2008, when the dollar index bottomed at around 70, gold was at topped at 1,030, and here we are now with the dollar index around 95, and gold is around 1,800. So what's done really well? Well, it's been gold. So in the end of the day, we can talk about the dollar and the euro being weak or strong, but I think what's going to win out at the end will be gold.
I think so too. I just don't think so yet. So I think fundamentally, as both coming from the Austrian School of Economics, we both have an interest in sound money. And seeing gold go up is something I'd love to see. So as a holder, a physical holder, as a trader right now, I actually fear for a deflationary event. So many people will look at this and they'll be thinking an upside break. We have our own methodology and we talk quite a bit about it, and I'll probably update my view on precious metals, but our concern is that there's first a sell-off here, which plays into, I suppose, the dollar index reasserting at some point. It's not happening today. What's disappointing for me on the daily here is that gold again performed pretty poorly in an environment the dollar was getting slammed.
Yeah,
And
yeah.
no, carry on.
No, I think maybe it's because of, yeah, I was surprised as well. But maybe it's because of the government bond yields in Europe going up, because people a lot of times talk about yields going up hurts gold.
Yes.
So,
Well, the
but I.
notion that you don't have negative yielding debt, you're actually getting paid something for holding some debt.
That doesn't help gold
And the
much.
basis is gold doesn't pay interest. So when you had negative yielding debts, it was a bid under gold because outside of your carry cost or your vaulting cost, it doesn't cost you money to have something that's really secure. But if people start to doubt in the security of debt and they have to, and they're paying a negative yield on it, then they were supporting gold. Now, as you mentioned, we've gone back positive on that. It's almost, I can see why, but it's disappointing if there's a, if there was a ground surge belief in sound money, precious metals on everything that's happened should be doing better. And that points to an underlying kind of weakness for me that sees we've got another event to eat, a bit of a, like the March health event that we experienced before we get unleashed again. It's just this absence of bid. It seems like the not-for-profit sellers are plenty of them around here and here. How would you characterize every time we got a little bit of a decent run together, you get this complete absence of bid. Most of the moves up are quite grindy. You have a few surge moments and then you get these escalator plummets.
Yeah. I think like the June drop there, the from last year, that was to do with the Fed becoming talking about tapering, and then I think last year as well they talked about tapering again, and I guess now the last Fed meeting and now the ECB. But you can't, the thing about it, yes,
gold, validations and justifications though, sometimes you just got to read the technical and be fundamental.
Oh yeah, no, but that's the technicals there, what I see is just like it has been like a battle between the bears and the bulls in paper trading, because people like you and me who have physical, we're not trading that, we're just holding. But it just goes to show that it's a battle, one trying, you know, and it's like a stalemate. And you could be right, we could break down, we could have an event like March 2020. But the thing is, for people who want to trade, that could be interesting. But for those people who want to buy real gold or silver for that matter, they probably won't even be able to get it if it goes to 1500. It will be there a matter of days and then just pop
high,
back.
High premiums. I think the actual costs to acquire for a retail, in other words, non-insider, won't necessarily change a huge amount, although paper prices could correct quite substantially. I think the premiums will counterbalance a large amount of that. So I absolutely, as a physical stacking on silver and gold and other one or two others that I've chosen to have as well, platinum, which I think is even more oversold in some senses given its scarcity. I mean, they say, I think if you speak to the CEO of First Majestic, he says eight to nine ounces of silver or gold, which in terms of the gold silver ratio, we're still in the 80s. We can pull that chart up next. But platinum is so much more scarce than both of them. And it's actually only two countries you get it in of any meaningful level. It's South Africa / Zimbabwe and Russia, which are hardly the bastions of stability. And it's mainly the non-use in catalytic converters since the pivots on diesels that has been a little bit of an overhang on them and pushed palladium. But what's your view on the other precious metals category, or are you stay with the major, gold and silver?
I stay mostly with gold and silver, but I've actually looked at palladium the other day because someone mentioned that it was up 24% this year. But one thing about palladium, though, it's since 2020, it's been very volatile. So it's a little bit like the crypto of precious metals. And platinum, I think they will all do well, because apart from precious metals, I also see a cyclical bull market in all commodities. That might get derailed for a few months.
I agree with that assessment as well. We've got a lot of commonalities, particularly energy. I think the energies are going to be stubbornly strong. Yeah. You're looking at this, you've had such a strong dollar, and you've got oil actually within a couple of dollars of year-long highs. It's in the 80s. We've called for triple digits again, and we're calling for 250 when the inflation game is all but up and everyone's realized that the central banks don't have the room left in the phone box for the debt elephants to actually even throw a right hook. And that we end up, it gets disorderly. And I think energies will be one of the leaders, which makes me think, you know, countries like Russia, because the ruble has been put under pressure with us, all the sanctions talks, but actually should do reasonably well. And of course, they're stacking gold in terms of that. So people like you and I will tend to look less critically at, and they've cleared out most of their debt as well, less critically. Yeah. I've got a theory that you might like, and I'd like your comment on it. Do you, first, a short question. Do you assess paper markets of bullion, gold and silver price, let's take just those two for now, as being actively manipulated?
I do. Yeah.
So but, do I.
But I've, you know, I've the first time I bought gold was in 2002. I bought some Krugerrands at 222 pounds an ounce, and and I started following gold every day because I was on a trading desk, and it wasn't very long until I realized that you had all these funny patterns, like every let's say afternoon London time around 1:30, I would notice that the gold price would drop. Then I learned that the COMEX regular hours started at 1:20. Yeah. And then another thing I saw was that after roughly 3 o'clock London, gold would get hit again. And I learned that it was after the PM fixing that the physical market in London shut, and then the futures took over. So I always saw those patterns. Yeah,
I'm frustrated because there's a chart that I wish I'd prepared in advance, because I've sort of on the cuff decided to take you down this one, because I think you'd be like me, quite sympathetic. But I actually have a theory that I'm building to, and my assessment is, yes, they are manipulated. There's a chart that essentially does this, and I'm sorry I don't actually have the actual chart. I'll maybe tweet it out later. We'll edit it in. But essentially, if you take the gold price on the Asian time zone and you take the gold price on the American time zone, you actually get two entirely different charts. So you actually get, let me choose a different color. Let's just go, this is Asia, and it literally is climbing through the roof. And if you just bought at the opening of the US session and closed at the end of the US session, you actually get a chart something like this.
Yeah.
And this is not a single year. This is actually multi-decade chart. And then the end actual gold price trajectory that you're getting is something like this, not particularly spectacular, but somewhat up, and is essentially the hybrid of the two extremes. And my point was, China still holds $1 trillion of US debt. The Asian session being the blue line, the aggregate of both being the full day, being the black gray line, and then the orange line being the US session. And that to me spelt like, I talk about John DeMartini, who was a very useful general mentor about balance, and where you suppress in one place, so you get a distortion in another. And he talks about balance. And this had me thinking, it points to the bond markets being hypervaluated and supported with this fake interest rates. We have much higher inflation rates, central banking cartel incentivized to do this. You have China sitting with $1 trillion of debt. And they will assess that essentially that debt is a poor asset that's not appreciating much further since this recent capitulation, paying very low yield and being clearly a net accumulator of gold. Could you, in sense, this is a conspiracy speculation entirely on my behalf, could we have an artificially kept up US bond market through cooperation at a financial macro event and a discount window for metals being kept open for the Asian market to do their accumulation, which I expect would be predominantly China, but other Asian nations. And they could be actually in compensation for the potential loss they'll take on any debt jubilee or sudden spike in rates, given that they know that they will eat and hold that trillion of debt, but they are being actively compensated and the window's being helped. So it's kind of like I'm underpaying you in salary, but I'm letting you steal all the silver out of the till, and I'm looking the other way on the other hand. Just out of curiosity, have you ever thought about this, and what would be your initial comments on that spitballing conspiracy suggestion?
I have thought about that, and I have seen this chart that you drew there, and I saw it the other day. Someone did it for silver, and the price of silver in Asia is like 220, and in the US it's still like a dollar 90 or something. It's something ridiculous. So, and I agree about the China situation, because we are told, of course, that China is our enemy and Russia, but these guys work together, and they hold, like I said, $1 trillion
Absolutely.
of this debt. They were almost burnt, the Chinese, in 08, because they had a lot of mortgage-backed securities. And the other thing, it kills two or several birds with one stone, because
Correct.
it discourages the American public from buying physical gold or any gold, because they see it as a volatile and risky commodity. And it keeps them in the paper game at home, and it helps the Chinese. It's like the Chinese say, "We will buy your treasuries, but we want to buy some gold too, so keep the price lower." So I agree with that.
Because my assessment is no one could rationally, with the volume of debt and the rate at which new debt is being created, and don't forget the time frame is shortening on the US debt as well. So it's not 30-year debts where they have a long window before they roll. They have to keep rolling, which is like new issuance. And the time frame is shortening. How is it even feasibly possible, especially if you're a pension fund head? How do you look at the situation and you're putting pension as money? As on in lieu, and a lot of it is contractual and obligation, we must mention as well, in terms of being a forced buyer in the market. But how can you actually say this is in the best interests of these people that will be old and are relying on you to provide income to buy this massively oversupplied market that, in some cases, you were discussing the euro negative yield, and the canary, the traditional canary in the gold mine for the debt and unsound money. Is invariably the gold market. We have these not for sale events that happen huge volume on the most illiquid moments. Everything points to orchestration and cooperation so that they can keep the smoke and mirrors going a little longer until they're ready to pull the wigwam down on all of us.
Yeah, and on the pension fund managers and their, I guess you call it, due diligence or fiduciary duty, I think they hide behind the rules that they have. Not they themselves, but the regulators. They say that they can only hold stocks and bonds 60-40. Like I remember a few years ago, the Central Bank of the Netherlands, that they banned one of their big funds from holding physical gold. So I think there are a lot of fund managers out there and pension fund managers who would probably want to put a lot of the money that they manage for people into gold, maybe even silver, but they're not allowed to. So they're just playing along.
Yeah, they've almost legislated it out and legislated in a massive support for the bond market through obligation of having, well, it's an annuity, you've got your commitment to paying fund. I mean, technically, you could have Apple stock and pay out of earnings or an oil company. You could have a mix of yield that are countercyclical. There's many ways that you can get earnings out of corporations through dividend streams and all of that. Given that our rates are so low, there are equities giving a better dividend stream than there are bonds paying, especially if you're in Europe. That's fascinating, and I just it's interesting to talk about it with people of a similar mindset. What's your trade of the year? What's your positioning for now? If I mean, we're still early in the year. We've ticked February. That first month's already dropped. We've got a little bit of a clue on the direction for the year that it's taken. Supposedly and allegedly, a tightening cycle that I'm sure both you and I will think is certainly quite truncated. Surely there's a deflationary spiller in that, which also dovetails fundamentally with my technical views. What's your trade? Is it a long, is it a short?
Well, I don't honestly trade too much, but in my channel I try to give a bigger picture view, I have longer term mining stocks, gold and silver. They haven't been doing too well. But it's funny you should ask what's the trade, because yesterday, for some reason, I started looking at the yield spread between the German government bond yield and the Italian government bond yield. It's the BTP bond yield, and in Italy, that's like the most important financial indicator. They call it il spread. And in 2011, 2012, when the euro almost collapsed and you had the sovereign debt crisis, you saw this Bund BTP yield spread go to above 300. Right now, I think it's around 100 and 100.
1.635 we've got
Yeah,
now.
150 of the BTP bond spread. And I think with the ECB maybe turning towards less asset purchases and accommodation, I think Italy could be in a lot of trouble. And the reason I want to looked into that is because I read a few articles, one in the Telegraph and one by Tom Luongo. He's on Zero Hedge, talking about how Mario Draghi, the prime minister, is maybe could be in trouble. He was supposed to have been elected president, but they've kept him as prime minister, which could be a positive as well. But I don't think he's got enough time to reform the Italian system and economy. So I think that could be a big trade. You buy the German government bond and you sell the Italian government bond in the 10-year.
Would a retail person easily be able to do that? I
No.
mean,
That's what I was going to say.
yeah.
That I couldn't do that. But yeah, as a trade, no. Well, I guess what you could do, you could, as a retail, you could buy BTP futures. I'm sure you could do those. There might be an ETF and then buy the Bund future. But as a spread, yeah, that's more for professional traders. But for the year, it's difficult to say because I try not to keep my time frame
Too short.
too
What is
short.
your time frame? So the more the 5 and 10 year investment picture, I'm
Yeah,
assuming
yeah, yeah.
things like pro metals, silver and gold, I would expect to find in there. So just for 2022, there's no specific event. Do you see this Bretton Woods Mark II event? Surely, with all of these people embarking on a tightening cycle, or claiming to be, we don't believe
Yeah.
them on a great scale, that we've got to have a deflationary moment. They've got to say, you see, we tried, look what happened, you all suffered, now we have to print again. You know, they've got to go through the motion of that cycle, and we're at that point where they're pretending to try.
Well, yeah, that's definitely possible. Like in I think 2020 was kind of like that. And because in 2019, from September, we had the repo crisis, and they already the Fed started doing not QE as they said, and then conveniently, in the pandemic came along, it gave them the excuse to just throw everything at it. And the next time, I don't know what it's going to be. Hopefully, it's not war. There's a lot of talk about war, with the Russians, the Ukraine. Or they've talked about, I think, the World Economic Forum. They had a cyber polygon last July or August preparing for a cyber pandemic where everything would shut down because there would be a cyber attack. They could blame the Russians or the Chinese for it, and they could use that as an excuse to reset everything. Who knows? I personally think the world is so turbulent and so uncertain that yeah, I've got a bit on the mining stocks. I've got some commodity ETFs, but it's money that I'd be not really greatly affected if it went to zero. So my safety, the thing that makes me sleep safe at night is the gold and silver, the physical, being outside the system.
I'm just wondering, you know, you're in a certain economic position, and we all have people watching this. And my assessment is, I think metals is the right investment. I think you're going to get an opportunity to get it cheaper on this Federal Reserve policy era. Like you, I think both central banks, we talked a lot about the ECB, we got Italian bonds here. I'll bring up Bitcoin for a change. We'll pivot to that in a minute. But essentially, both are behind the curve. They've both done way too much. They have no way of reining it back. I don't know if you recall, you will, because you're similar era to me, the Volcker years, it was deeply stubborn inflation to pull back. And it took a long time and a lot of tightening pain to get there. Once it's got away as a monster, you need to kill a monster when it's really small. Once it's a teenager already, it's too big, it's too strong, you've got to do a lot of battery of the general macroeconomic environment and push recessions, excuse me, continually to rein it back, and it just keeps coming. It really is like a horror movie. You've got to put a wooden stake through the heart. That is what inflation to me tends to mean once it's got away. And actually, the central bankers know this, and they know they haven't got enough room to fight that hard, but they're going to talk the game, etc. They're going to attempt maybe to do more on inflation than people have baked in the Fed put on the stock market, and the stock market could keep falling, and they could keep, at least at the micro level, 0.25 points a time, keep tightening. And the Fed put won't come. They've trained everyone into believing the put, a bit like the Euro-Swiss franc collapse of 2015. You know, it was central bank policy until it wasn't. And there was a much bigger need. And the need was, we can't eat so many euros at this price. And they walked. And, you know, all those brokers blew up and everybody thought, but you had my back. You had my back. What about the Fed put? I could see that betrayal on the Fed put potentially being, and you're actually having a substantial correction. You mentioned valuations. Equity growth against value, it's at all-time extremes. Revenue to earnings, all-time extremes, making dot-com peak looks cheap in the tech growth sector. It's perfect to let it all happen. And there's also this you'll own nothing, the World Economic Forum, that I think we both seem to keep half an eye on. It's a perfect flush out to turn people into forced sellers and pick them up for pennies in the pound, which is almost the Rockefeller playbook in every major instance. I kind of feel they're going to hit us first before it goes, and they will tighten that little bit longer than people expect.
What's your take
on that? If you're the new guy, because I started this all, wouldn't the new guy be better served building cash first and then seizing that blood in the street moment for gold and silver?
That definitely. And what you said there about the Fed put, they would now have the wherewithal to crush opposition, social opposition, because of what's happened in the last 2 years. They have all the rules in the books, on the books. And as for having laws
that they've added.
Yeah. And as for having cash, blood in the streets, that's interesting. The thing is, if you are going to let everything implode, you're going to get a lot of bank, a lot of failures everywhere, counterparty risk. So yeah, gold might drop, let's say, to 1500, let's say. But then if the Dow is down at 10 or 15,000, it's all relative. That's the way I look at it. Yeah, having some Federal Reserve notes could be interesting, but if you have it in a small bank and it collapses because of the deflationary events, you might not get that cash. Will the FDIC or the FCSC insurance work? Will they do a bail-in as well? That's the other problem. They could bail in. That's why I like having something outside.
The cash argument, making the perfect environment for people holding cash, is also the perfect environment for the bank hack, because that's how you hollow everybody else. So even the smart people that recognize risk on is not for holding right now, including, let's say, Bitcoin, and are all in Tether that's supposed to have deposits or USDC and cash in the bank because they sold all their equities because they felt they were crashed. It's an ideal time to capture. You've herded everybody into the one field right next to the abattoir. You do the Russian hack story, and it's a case of, sorry, you know, blame it on the Russians, blame it on the Chinese. Nothing much we can do about that apart from lob a few bombs in their direction. It ain't giving you your money back. Oh, it's also a UBI on ramp. for the crushed pensions because the bond market gets killed. So we say, okay, everyone, your pension is broken. We recognize that, but we're going to do a UBI for everyone above there that is liable for pension. You get this, and they'll have proliferate central bank digital token for UBI handouts, providing you've done your, you know, health-based interventions that they want. It's very interesting that you mentioned also that the pandemic of March 2020 has given them a lot of enforcement power, because we're seeing the claim of our aggressive behavior to Canadian troops trying to move trucks, which actually I haven't seen. I don't think it's aggressive at all. I think it's MSM fallacy. But this trucking thing could also be, if they create an incident, there's that social event where troops or police fire on civilians in the active process that will then set a very dangerous precedent that they can then extend martial law type powers to security forces. Any take on that? We're getting almost a little bit reset, but I'm still curious how you would see that go.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen people get shot at in Australia recently, even in the Netherlands. So yeah, I think with Canada.
Five rounds? I didn't know that. Live ammunition, not rubber bullets.
Rubber bullets, yeah.
That's kind of different. It's sort of crowd control.
Yeah, I get. But I think, you know, they could use also the cyber pandemic as an excuse to shut everything off. And then they can say, well, it wasn't our fault. It was because of this. Yeah. A lot of things. They can. And there's the war card as well, I would say.
Yeah. What about crypto? Where does crypto fit into your views? So as a clear precious metals. Bitcoin.
Sorry.
Is it a bottom? Yeah, that's what many people ask.
Yeah, I mean, I started looking at crypto actually back in 2011, 2012.
And, you've been around.
I was into, you know, I've been into sound money and for many years even before that. And then I looked at Bitcoin and I read about it and that it was supposed to replace the fiat currency system because of what happened in 08, that we're gonna get people were gonna be able to have like access to banking, but outside the banking system, so to speak, the fees would be really low. And I thought it was really interesting. I mean, I remember Bitcoin trading at $50, and I used to trade it against other altcoins at the time. But I mean, the growth in Bitcoin has been huge, of course, and the altcoins. And I think it's become, unfortunately, very speculative, very leveraged. And one thing that I find a little bit concerning is that Wall Street now is trying to push cryptocurrencies. And I always find that a little bit concerning. But the idea of decentralization of the blockchain, of not having like a central office for some kind of project, is very interesting. So yeah, technically, yeah, it looks like a double top, even though it's a little higher, the top, you know, at 68 or 69 from that 66, I think. And 30,000, I guess, is a key level. And if we can stay above that 28, 30, I think we could maybe go back up. But Tether as well, I saw you put Tether there, Bitcoin versus Tether.
Yes.
And I don't know if you want to talk about that, because I have some ideas about Tether as well.
Yeah, let us know. What's your take?
Well, I've been looking at it for the last couple of years. I saw someone post an anonymous article about Tether back in, I think, 2020, and basically saying how Tether is not backed one-to-one because they're supposed to be one-to-one with the Federal Reserve, with the dollar. And there hasn't been an audit to Tether. And they do post some data on their website, and they're leveraged like basically almost 30-to-1. And If you compare the market cap of Tether with the price of Bitcoin, they seem to go hand in hand. So I think it's almost like the central bank
It's the
for the
same
crypto
system by the
currency.
same people for me.
Yeah, which seems to be defeat the whole purpose of cryptocurrencies.
Yes,
So
I'm afraid I'm one of these big Bitcoin fixes this. I'm sorry, no, it doesn't. I think it's the same people are behind it. I think people bought a fairy tale. I think the whole Satoshi Nakamoto story of this benevolent billionaire with origin address who just walked away from it all and never collected his prize and all of that is it's Santa Claus tales for adults. And too many have bought it. The fact that blockchain is going to be used and is essentially open source banking is absolutely ideal for a privacy stripping cartel to impose as a new banking system. And they had to look like they hated it. I thought it's all an act, this Jamie Dimon first calling it a fraud, had to look like they hated it to make libertarians interested because they have to capture the libertarians first. Everyone else follows once if it's good enough for. You know, cynical libertarian Joe, then it's good enough for me. I truly think people should be far more dispassionate and they should take money out of it. If there is a good trade investment opportunity, they should debunk all notions of fantasy around it being your freedom from government and tax extractor. And as you mentioned, derivatives getting in. Wall Street getting in. This is great for adoption and price go up for a while, but it doesn't go up forever, as everyone is now realizing. And in terms of it's an absolute capture. If it wasn't or didn't start captured already, it's quite clearly already deeply captured. And you're getting more and more tax rules clarification, and it's just going to be absorbed. Like an amoeba, it's been absorbed into the extraction mechanism. So price-wise, you want to see it stay above the 29 and a half and not run this low, I'm assuming that I've done
Yeah,
here.
that's right. Yeah. And the other thing that always bugged me about Bitcoin is Satoshi Nakamoto, that he's anonymous and that you don't really know who he is. And the counter argument was that, well, the white paper is great, there's no problems. And so, but yeah, that 20, 28, 20, 28,030 level is really key. And after that, I think you have to go back to, the 2017, 2018 top, which is around 20,000.
Yeah, revisit to previous highs. If I were to get my deflationary strike call, I could see us running that, and then maybe you're mentioning the 20K top could be a bounce level. If you are on the dollar weakness side and you actually think dollar's right and we go your path route, then this could be a localized low. And I do think while Bitcoin could rally from here, I don't see it going to the other side. But if there was a sustained period of dollar weakness implying overall fiat, not so much confidence in fiat, not so much fear trade, the risk on would come back on and you could see at least movement to the upside from here because you had quite a decent hammer there for now. Yeah, good. Any parting positions? If you were sitting down with any particular member of the subscriber to my channel here, and he had 100 grand to invest, how would you counsel them in terms of principles, and also what would you have them do? Because many people, oh, well, I'll only have 5% metals. I'm a bull. Like Reichardt's, but then he talks about 5%. And then I'm of the view in extreme times, particularly people that maybe only have 100 grand, let's say, or 10 grand. Could the number just any multiple? But let's work with 100 grand. What would you have them do with that? Would you have a really big allocation? Say they're in their mid-30s profile. They really need to build wealth. They're not overly worried about short-term pension. They still have their physical health. Would you overweight them in gold? How would you carve up their 100K? And what other assets would you put in?
Yes, I try to tell people, given my opinion, so it's not financial advice, but anyway, I think it's more than just like looking at markets and investing. I know we talk about markets, but it's also looking at that 100K and seeing maybe how you can improve your skills. So think about investing in yourself in terms of how I see things, I would definitely have some exposure to precious metals, to commodities.
What
I
would
would
be the percentage on your gold silver breakdown? Let's say we include gold and silver, all forms of PMs. What would be the total?
I think I would favor silver right now because
Yeah.
silver is so undervalued. I
Got
know it's come down a lot since 2020, the spread, but I think it could still outperform gold quite a bit. So 25, let's say 25% gold, 50% silver, and then the rest, it's up to the individual. I think people need to not depend so much on other people, but do their own homework. Like Jesse Livermore, he was a lone wolf. He learned from other people, but then he deep down he looked at what he thought was right. And I think that's the best advice that I can give to people. Find something that interests you, and it's like become obsessed. I don't think being obsessed is a bad thing. And
No.
if you're going to trade, that's a different game because I think it's a full-time job. But if you're going to invest, then and also be careful with leverage. Leverage is a double-edged sword. That's the other important thing.
I agree with what you said there. Invest in yourself. Do things that add value to you so that you can add value to others generally, but then also take an inch. I think looking after your money should be a skill that everyone should seek to have, and that you should be seeking to be self-directed as much as humanly possible on that. And too many people just say, I'll be a great carpenter and I'll just give X amount a month to my financial advisor. I think it's almost like brushing your own teeth. No one else is going to, do it for you. And you can't trust them to do it particularly well. It's almost a chore for them, even if they paid well to do it, which the financial industry never seems to miss an opportunity to ensure that happens. And it's so much better if you can take it in, and that will involve making mistakes. But if you do not use the leverage that you mentioned, I think a lot of really strong points you made there. You survive. No one hangs themselves for losing 15% on a stock market correction. But if loan everything because you went in and you had conviction, well, that's a different story.
Because when you don't use leverage, and I did trade in the past quite a bit, and I didn't use much leverage. And if you have conviction and you can sit through, and I know a lot of people think the rule of trading is getting out, don't run your losses. But I found that even running relatively big losses, once the market turns and it goes up, and you sit through that, it becomes so much easier to stay on when it goes higher. So
Yes.
it all depends on the individual, on your character. Some people might be listening to me and say, "Well, this old guy is too conservative." If you want to use leverage too, but be aware that it's like a double-edged sword and it can really wipe you out.
They say, beware the old warrior.
Yeah.
He's lived through many a battle. He might just know something and be a pretty handy fighter. Mario, this has been great checking in with you. I've enjoyed it. I think you've got a lot of good insights there. I'm also glad to be challenged on my dollar strength. I don't think I've changed my mind, but I'll revisit it and continue to model for how we be wrong. I think that's a great idea for everyone to do, if I can leave that as advice. How does this not work? And you gave me some ideas. But on most other things, I think we're in large agreement. Thank you very much. How do people engage? Tell everyone again how you'd like them to find you if they want to follow more.
Yeah, I mean, I make a YouTube video, virtually every day, Maneco64 on YouTube. I'm also on Twitter quite regularly now, at Maneco64. And I do have that a blog, Maneco64.net. And I usually write some articles there every few months, not very regularly. But yeah, the best place is on my YouTube channel. And once you go there as well, you'll find out that I post on other platforms like blockchain-based platforms as well, like BitChute, Hive, and Steemit.
Great. Excellent, guys. So go check out Monaco 64. Certainly start on the YouTube. I'm sure you'll find some other links there of interest. Mario, thanks for coming and sharing your thoughts for us. And we should do this again sometime. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, and thanks for having me.